Andy, turn to Joshua chapter 21. Joshua chapter 21. I have read that according to legend, at least in parts of the Greek Empire, or a tradition or a legend came out of the Greek culture that said to prevent the passing of frivolous laws that would be oppressive to the people, that apparently there was a tradition of making lawmakers, when they introduced a new bill, stand on a platform with a noose around their neck. And if the bill passed, they removed the noose. If the bill did not pass, they removed the platform. Now, I don't know if that took place. It's, you read about traditions and legends and you wonder about them. But if that was a true habit, at least in some portion of the Greek Empire, that's what I would call commitment. In other words, if you're going to introduce a new law, you need to be convinced that it's needed and that it's going to pass. Tonight we're talking about communities of commitment. This morning we talked about communities of grace as we talked about the cities of refuge. But tonight we turn our attention to Joshua chapter 21 and the cities of the Levites, those whose lives were devoted to service to God. Let's read the first 8 verses, if you will, of Joshua chapter 21. We're not going to try to read this whole chapter, but you get a nice introduction in the first 8 verses, and then it breaks it down city by city in the rest of the chapter. Then the heads of the households of the Levites approached Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun, and the heads of the households of the tribes of the sons of Israel. They spoke to them at Shiloh in the land of Canaan, saying, "The Lord commanded through Moses to give us cities to live in and with pasture lands for our cattle." So the sons of Israel gave the Levites from their inheritance these cities with their pasture lands according to the command of the Lord. Then the lot came out for the families of the Kohathites and the sons of Aaron the priest, who were of the Levites, and they received 13 cities by lot from the tribe of Judah and from the tribe of the Simeonites and from the tribe of Benjamin. The rest of the sons of Kohath received 10 cities by lot from the families of the tribe of Ephraim and from the tribe of Dan and from the half-tribe of Manasseh. The sons of Gershon received 13 cities by lot from the tribe of Issachar and from the tribe of Asher and the tribe of Naphtali and from the half-tribe of Manasseh and Bashan. The sons of Merari, according to their families, received 12 cities from the tribe of Reuben, from the tribe of Gad, and from the tribe of Zebulun. Now the sons of Israel gave by lot to the Levites these cities with their pasture lands, as the Lord had commanded through Moses. Now what I'd like to do is just kind of talk just a moment about the Levites in general, and then hit some highlights, 3 quick points to ponder that we might find, I think, from this particular chapter, and this lesson will be yours. Now I'm going to tell you, if you want to go into more detail, there's a lot of stuff we could look at into the cities and the significance of those cities, but we don't have time to do that tonight. If you want to go into more detail, if you would get with Shelley Fulks right after services, she will be glad to help you, because Shelley has been studying Joshua for a year. She's got Joshua on the brain. And when they did the last leader's test, did you miss 2? So there's 2 questions you can't ask her, but anything else you can ask her about the Levites. In fact, she asked me, "Now, which chapter are we doing tonight?" But Joshua chapter 21. First of all, let's just kind of survey what's going on among the Levitical families, because that's something we need to know as we look at this particular chapter. You've really got 3 sons of Levi and their descendants that are identified. Now you'll notice, or you may have noticed as we looked at Joshua chapter 21, that it's broken into 4 groups. But one of the 4 groups is a subgroup of the descendants of Levi coming from the line of Kohath. So you can see up there you've got Aaron, Kohath, Gershon, and Merari. Now, again, remember that Aaron comes from Kohath, and so that's why you get a separate group. The descendants of Aaron had a very special status among the children of Israel. They had a special responsibility. Their responsibility was to serve specifically in the tabernacle, in the presence of the Lord, and later on in the temple, in the presence of the Lord. And so you'll notice that it's that line with a special responsibility and a special relationship with God. That line, they are chosen first. They are given their cities first, and they're given 13 cities. You've got 48 cities total that are given. Then you've got another 10 cities that are given to the rest of the descendants of Kohath. And so you got 13 given to Aaron and 10 more given to the rest of the family. And as you can see up there on the screen, it kind of describes a little bit of what their responsibilities were in relation to the movement of the tabernacle when they traveled in their wilderness wanderings and coming into the Promised Land. This family was responsible for the movement of the ark and the major furnishings of the tabernacle. The things that were most sacred and most holy were handled by this family. Then you've also got the family of Gershon. Now Gershon is the first son. Kohath is the second son of Levi. Gershon is the first son of Levi. In this family, their main responsibility in relation to the tabernacle when it moved around, they were responsible for the cloth. Okay, any kind of material that was used, the covering of the tent and divisions and so forth, those things were carried by this family. Then you've got the family of Merari. These are descendants of the third son of Levi. And they were responsible, first of all, for kind of being the guards of the tabernacle or the tabernacle, but they also were responsible for carrying the superstructure, if you will, the framework that all the garments and the cloth and so forth were hung on. So you've got one family carrying the items inside, one family carrying the cloth, one family carrying the framework. And these four groups would have camped around the tabernacle. And you would have had the family of Aaron on the eastern side where the opening was. And they were a buffer between the people and the tabernacle to protect people and to keep people, to kind of guard the tabernacle, but also to protect the people. Because if people got too close to the tabernacle, went into the wrong place in the tabernacle at the wrong time, then it could cost them their lives. So they have a special, special role and relationship. A lot of great leaders came out of the tribe of Levi, and you can see some of those listed up there on the screen, Moses, Aaron, Eli, etc. In the New Testament, John that we know as John the Baptist or John the Immerser comes from the tribe of Levi. So this is a very important tribe that would have a tremendous influence on the children of Israel. What I tried to list here is just a listing of the cities that they received. Aaron's family received 13. I believe Kohath, the rest of that family, received 10. You've got Gershon, they received 13. And the family Merari received 12. And so if I added that up right, I think we've got 48 cities. So you can kind of add that up and figure it out and see if I got that. Marcia's shaking her head, so we're good. So as you look at that, what I tried to do you notice certain cities are highlighted in red? Those are cities of refuge. Remember we talked about this morning that the cities of refuge came from among the 48 Levitical cities. What you'll notice is that each of the three main families got two Levitical cities. Okay? One family has two cities that are on the left side of the Jordan. Another family has two cities that are on the right side of the Jordan. And then one family gets one from each side. But I just want to kind of see how that's dispersed. And again, as you look at it, the family of Aaron, they got one to themselves. But remember, the rest of the family got one, and so those two together mean two for the overall family, the family of Kohath. So you can kind of look at that. You may notice, I don't know if you remember, some of the cities that we've been talking about throughout this. For example, you may see Jarmuth on the list. Those are one of the cities that rebelled in the coalition, the southern coalition that attacked Israel in that great battle. That's one of the cities that was defeated. You're going to see Hebron there, important city we've talked about. Shechem, important city we've talked about. You're going to see Gibeon on this list. Remember, we talked about them and the role they played in the treachery in deceiving Israel into making peace and so forth. So just you might find it of interest to notice that some of these cities we've talked about along the way would become important city for the tribe of Levi. Now, I've also got one more picture I want you to look at, and you can look at this map, and I hope you can see the lines fairly well. I tried to put the family names. Hopefully, you can see the three family names in red. Does that stand out okay? And what I tried to do is to make a circle showing you mainly where their cities are. basically, the family of Kohath, their cities are located in the bottom left portion of your map, in the region around Jerusalem, because that's the family that has the most direct responsibility for the tabernacle, or what would later become known as the temple when they built an established place for God. And so most of their cities are all in that area. Okay? And you can also see Gershon. They're all located mostly up around the Sea of Galilee. In the family of Merari, almost all of their cities are over here on the right-hand side of your map in the region on the eastern side of the Jordan River. So I just kind of want you to see, because sometimes you look at all these cities and you say, okay, well now how does that lay out on the map? Are they all mixed up? Are they clumped together? And you're going to find that basically their cities are clumped together in certain regions, but you do find through this that Levitical cities are scattered all the way through the tribes, so that you have people in every tribe, in every area, who are especially devoted to the service of God and the knowing and spreading of knowledge of His law. He wanted to make sure that permeated all the tribes. And we'll talk about in a few moments another reason for that. So as we look at those things, kind of get a little bit that background stuff out of the way, there are three points to ponder that I would like to highlight for just a few moments. And I'm going to use the letter G as our memory glue. The first thing I want us to do is I want us to talk about giving. If we go to Numbers chapter 3, verses 11 and 12, God says there that He chose the tribe of Levi to take the place of the firstborn. There is a consistent pattern throughout the Old Testament, and that pattern is that you give the first and the best to God. The firstborn of your animals belongs to God. The firstborn of your children belongs to God. The first fruits of your crops and your income belongs to God. The idea is that everything we have comes from God, and so we need to give back to Him. And so He built a pattern of giving back to God. We can go on in Numbers, I believe it's chapter 18, I believe it is. He's going to talk about the fact that the tithe of the Israelites was to go to the Levites. There's a lot of giving that is connected with the tribe of Levi. For example, as I mentioned from Numbers 3, talked about the fact that they took the place of the firstborn. Technically, the firstborn child belonged to God, but God wasn't going to actually go and take a child out of every family. What He did is He says, I'm basically going to take this tribe, and they're going to be especially devoted to Me. Their work, their job, is to serve My tabernacle. They take the place of all of those firstborns in all the families. So if I live back then, I'm firstborn in my family, those Levites, one of those Levites, he took my place in serving God because the firstborn is to belong to God. You also see the tithing going on all through the Old Testament. Remember, when they gave inheritance to Levi, they didn't get as much land as everybody else. They got a city and some pasture land around it for some of their flocks, but that's about it. They didn't have as much land as everybody else, so they couldn't grow crops like everybody else. So how do they survive if they don't have land for crops? That's where tithing came in. People gave a tenth of their income, a tenth of their crops. That went to the Levitical tribes that were around them. And that's how they provided for the Levites living in those cities. So they could have some flocks and they had some pasture land, but then they were given a tithing of the grain and so forth from the neighboring tribes and cities, and that's how they survived. But also you see a tithing taking place in these cities themselves. You've got an interesting breakdown in the book of Joshua. Okay, you've got basically 24 chapters. The first 12 chapters are about controlling the land. They're taking control of the land. Then the last half of the book is about dividing up the land among the children of Israel. And so what you've been dealing with basically from chapter 13 up through chapter 19 is you've been focusing on the giving of the land to the different tribes. What is happening in chapters 20 and 21 is that the tribes are giving some of it back. In other words, just as they tithed of their money, and just as they tithed of their flocks, and just as they tithed of their crops, they also tithed of their inheritance. They gave, every tribe gave cities from their inheritance back to God. Those cities became cities for the tribe of Levi. And so I want us to see that when you look at the Levites and their reaction, their interaction with the children of God and what's going on in this chapter, the emphasis is on giving. They are giving of themselves and their lives in devotion of God, and then giving of the cities to them, the giving of the tithe to them. The emphasis is on giving. I'm reminded in 1 Corinthians chapter 16 that we're to lay by in store on the first day of the week. And you have, when you got in the New Testament and they started talking about giving, when Jesus talked about giving, give and it will be given to you, pressed down, shaken down, and running over. He said he was carrying on a concept from the Old Testament. When Paul started telling those early churches to give and lay by in store on the first day of the week, it wasn't shocking to any of them. Whether they came out of the Jewish culture or the Greek culture, giving was a way of life. And for those who came out of the Jewish culture, that heritage can be seen in Joshua chapter 21. I also want to emphasize that I believe here we see grace. If you go back to Genesis chapter 34, Dinah, a daughter of Jacob, was raped by Shechem. And what happens in the aftermath is that Simeon and Levi, two of her brothers, trick Shechem and his family, and after tricking them, they kill them. And you can read about that and you look at verses 25 through 27 of Genesis chapter 34. Jacob goes on to say later in that same chapter that their actions risked the entire family, risked making them an enemy of all the people in the land of Canaan. In other words, because of your actions, he says to Simeon and Levi, the whole family could have been wiped out. And so it shouldn't surprise us that when we get over to Genesis chapter 49, I believe around verses 5 to 7, somewhere thereabouts, when Jacob is about to die and he's giving the blessings and cursings for his sons, when he talks about Simeon and Levi, he says that you will be scattered in Judah. You will be scattered among the tribes. When we get over then into the allotment that takes place in the book of Joshua, you're going to find that that is exactly what happens. Simeon basically receives an inheritance that's in the middle of Judah's inheritance, and eventually over time the tribe of Simeon is basically just swallowed up in the tribe of Judah. You're also going to find that the tribe of Levi, because of this statement made by Jacob, because of guidance from God back in Genesis 49, the tribe of Levi is not given a specific set of land, a portion of land as an inheritance. They are given cities, literally as Jacob said, scattered among the tribes, scattered in Judah. So I want us to see that part of what's going on in here is fulfillment of prophecy and punishment going back to the actions of Simeon and Levi way back in Genesis chapter 34. Now here's what's of interest to me, is that you also see, even though this is an act of punishment, you also see grace. For example, I want you to think about Simeon. Part of their punishment was that they received their inheritance among the tribe of Judah, were swallowed up in Judah, just basically almost didn't exist as a separate tribe. But I want you to remember what eventually happened to the nation of Israel. Eventually, the nation of Israel divided after the death of Solomon into a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. The southern kingdom lasted 100 years plus, actually over 100 years, longer than the northern kingdom did. Which kingdom did Simeon become a part of because it was swallowed up in Judah? It became a part of the southern kingdom of Judah, the kingdom that ended up being the most faithful to God and having the greatest longevity. So they didn't have the prominence and inheritance of the other tribes, but even in the midst of their punishment, they found a blessing. I also want you to think about something in relation to the tribe of Levi. Levi was told, they were told, that they would be scattered among the tribes. But something important happens in Exodus chapter 32. In Exodus chapter 32, you have the incident of the golden calf. And you remember, after Moses comes down from the mountain, Moses is furious with the people. He is on the mountain receiving commandments from God, basically the vows of the wedding ceremony between God and Israel. Right in the middle of the ceremony between God and Israel, where God and Israel are making a commitment to each other, the Israelites are building a statue to a false god. They're going back to the ways they learned in Egypt. And so when they come down from the mountain, I want you to notice what Moses says. Then Moses stood in the gate of the camp in verse 26 of Exodus 32 and said, "Whoever is for the Lord, come to me. And all the sons of Levi gathered together to him." And the Levites, I want you to go back to their forefather Levi, who had sown such aggression to right what he felt, or what was a wrong of his sister, but to right it in a way that he felt he was supposed to right it. You see that same devotion and tenacity handled in the way God wanted in Exodus chapter 32. And it sounds unbelievable to us, but basically what the Levites did is they took out their swords and just started going through the camp killing people. And it was God's way of punishing the people because they had rejected God. Because, in fact, everybody deserved to die for what they had done. They were fortunate that only about 3,000 of them died in that particular event. Because of that devotion to God, Levi, or in part because of that, Levi became very, very special to the Lord. And so I want you to think about, when you go back to Genesis chapter 49, the future looks bleak for the tribe of Levi. But Levi, in time, they showed their true stripes and their true colors. They showed a devotion to God and to doing what was right. And for that, God rewarded them. God made them a tribe especially devoted to Him, a tribe special in service to Him. And I don't know if you see this, but I see God's grace in what's going on here. That again, part of what's happening in Joshua is punishment for the sins of the past. But it's also the showering on God's grace on future descendants and the exercising of God's forgiveness on those who have changed and no longer walk in the ways of their parents. I'm reminded of Ephesians chapter 4, where we're told to be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God in Christ has forgiven us. I want us to realize that just as the tribe of Simeon and the tribe of Levi received the grace of God, so too are we here tonight as recipients of the grace of God. The third thing I want us to notice is the emphasis on God. The inheritance of Levi was not a section of land. Remember, they didn't get the same inheritance that all the other tribes did. What they did get is God. If you go to Joshua chapter 13, verse 32, you can look in chapter 18, verse 7 as well. It's going to say that the inheritance for the people of Levi was God and the priesthood. He was their inheritance. I want you to go all the way back to Genesis chapter 12, where God made a covenant with a man named Abram that we would come to know as Abraham. He promised him three things. He said, "I'll make you a great nation, I'll give you a land of your own, and through you all nations of the earth will be blessed." Now, the Israelites, in much of their existence, focused on the first two. But the greatest promise in that promise was the third one, the being blessed by God and in God. I want us to realize that Levi didn't get as big a chunk of land, if you will, as the other tribes. But they got the best inheritance, because they got God. They got a unique, special, and close relationship with the Father. In 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4, it says, "And coming to Him as a living stone, which has been rejected by men, but is choice and precious in the sight of God, you also as living stones are being built up as a spiritual house for a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ." The greatest inheritance the Levites received was that they were able to be priests of the Most High God, that they had a special relationship with the Father. The message of the New Testament is that you don't have to be of one of those three families that descended from Levi, but if you and I are in Christ Jesus, then we are a royal priesthood, specially devoted to God, and we're to live our lives committed to Him and serving to Him, just as the tribes of Levi. We're not scattered in 48 cities, but we're scattered around the world, helping the those we meet from day to day to know the Lord. Would you take out your psalm books and turn to the hymn of encouragement? As you turn there, think about the NBA finals have started this past week in professional basketball. You think about there are men who have devoted their entire lives to winning a championship. Started training as small boys and have made choices. They've had long days and strenuous workouts all for that prize. But they don't mind. They're committed to that because it matters to them. I noticed when we pulled up tonight, or when I pulled in the parking lot, I noticed some guys out playing soccer. And just about any time, 24 hours a day, you can see folks playing soccer over here. And I don't know about you, when I was coming in, it was raining. But they didn't mind that it was raining. You know why they didn't mind? Because they're committed to soccer. I want you to, each of us, to think about our own lives. We don't mind a little rain if it's something we enjoy doing. Okay, now if we've got to work, oh man, it's raining, I can't get out in that stuff. But man, if we've got a softball game, man, what's a little rain hurt? You see, we don't mind making sacrifices and giving up things for what we're really, really committed to. As you think about what's going on in Joshua chapter 21, I think it ought to be a reminder to us that we are recipients of God's grace, and that the greatest blessing and inheritance we have is a relationship with God. If we treasure that, if we value that, if we're committed to that, then giving, sacrifice, commitment, and devotion comes easy. Because if He's what really matters, then we'll be willing to do anything to honor Him with our lives. What is it that we need to do tonight to honor Him? Maybe there's somebody here tonight that needs to honor Him by making Him Lord of their life. They say, I believe in Jesus, I worship with His people all the time, I pray and I read His Word, but I've never given my life to Him in baptism. I hope tonight that you'll be committed enough to, based on your faith, to come and be baptized into Christ for the forgiveness of sins. For those of us who are in Christ, are we committed enough that we're willing to give up our sinful ways? Is there something in my life that I need to change, that I need to give up, that I need forgiveness for? Whatever it is, let's change. Whether it's something that needs to be done in private or something that needs to be done right now, let's have the courage to do it tonight, maybe even right now, as we stand and sing.